I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. In May 2014, Frank White celebrated his 100th birthday. Last year, he published a memoir, Milk Spills and One Log Loads, Memories of a Pioneer Truck Driver. It was a bestseller and was full of great stories about growing up in Abbotsford in the Fraser Valley in the 1920s and 1930s. This year, Mr. White published a second volume of memoirs. That went by fast, my first 100 years. I picked it up this weekend hoping to skim through it and ended up reading half in a few hours. It's such a charming book, one that's candid, funny, and goes through some very eventful years. Frank White's adventures are legion. It's amazing he fit all of them in 100 years as a pioneer truck driver, camp owner, boat builder, mechanic, waterworks operator, and husband to New York writer Edith Iglauer. Frank White goes through it all in this wonderful book. Joining me now to talk about Frank, this book, and more is Frank's son and his publisher, the president of Harbor Publishing, Howard White. Howard's got all the awards and honors in this province and this country that if we were to list them, we wouldn't have time for an interview. The website for more is at harborpublishing.com. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program from Madeira Park, B.C., Howard White. Mr. White, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we're talking on a Tuesday afternoon, or Tuesday morning, I should say. So let's start with how Frank is today.
Oh, he's fine. I haven't talked to him this morning yet. I usually do talk to him and Edith every day. They live just across the bay from me here in Pender Harbor, mm-hmm. and they're still living on their own. She's 97 and he's 100, and they have help, but they're still in the little cottage that Edith moved into back in the 60s when she first came to Pender Harbor and married John Daly, the man that she wrote the book Fishing with John about, they are doing very well. Dad is not mobile anymore. He's in a wheelchair. But other than that, he's sharp as a tack, and they both just sit there looking out the window across Pender Harbor and admiring the boats and feeling that all's right with the world.
Taking the fact that you're his son out of the equation for just a sec, Howard, as a book publisher, these two books now that you've published of his memoirs, they must be really special.
Well, the funny thing is that they are exactly the kind of book that Harbor has always published, that we're known for. And, you know, they're the kind of books that if they had come in from an absolute stranger living somewhere in Vancouver Island or something, you know, we would have been all over them. We would have jumped on them and said, what a great book. Let's publish it right away. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they actually came from within my family still has me sort of scratching my head that this could have happened.
And so what was the process? I guess you were the guy that coaxed him into starting this, right?
Well, I did trigger it way back in an early edition of Raincoast Chronicles, mm-hmm. When I was looking for someone who could tell me a story about truck logging, and I asked my dad for some pointers. Of course, like most kids, I never gave my parents any credit for really knowing anything important, and so it didn't occur to me that he would actually be able to give me the history of truck logging himself. But I asked him if he just sort of could point me in the right direction, and he started talking, and I started listening, and then I started taping him, and I started listening to the tapes, and I realized that here was a kind of, it wasn't kind of a formal history of truck logging, but it was an on-the-ground history of truck logging, mm-hmm. and spoken in a very engaging way by a guy who, you know, just the way he spoke on the job to his buddies. And so we published it up just like that, without cleaning it up or, you know, making it into proper English or anything. And it won what was then the Media Club Award for the best magazine feature of the year. And so he was quite chuffed by this and decided that, well, friends urged him to write the rest of his story. He was only in his 60s then.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started in, and of course he still had a long life to lead after that, and he worked until he was 80. So he just took notes mainly for the intervening years, but he always intended, he was always talking about this book he was writing, and so he, in the, oh, couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I got after him. I said, look, you know, you're 96 now. If you don't get on with it, this thing is never going to get done. So he did go back over his notes, and then I helped him. And he wrote it all out, and it was so long. It was over 200,000 words, which is twice the length of a normal book,
mm-hmm.
that we had to break it into two pieces. So that's why there's two books, one that came out last year, Milk Spills and One Log Loads, and that went by fast, which came out this year.
And in terms of writing these two books and you editing them for him, did you get to know him better? Is there stuff that you didn't know about him before?
Oh, yeah. Yes. You know, I mean, I was just like any other young guy growing up. I'd hear my dad talking and talking and talking about the old days, and I'd sort of tune him out, you know. And so I knew a lot of his stories in kind of rough outline, but I'd never sat down and listened to them in detail and got the full story. And it was very fascinating to finally do that and put it all together. And yeah, it was quite transformative, really. It caused me to see him in a different way, and it's funny to say that after having lived with him for, well, I've known him for 80 years, I guess. And yeah, in reading these books over, I see him more as a separate person and quite a remarkable one. You know, mm-hmm. your parents, you kind of take them for granted. They're always there. Oh, well, you don't have to think much about them. And this has allowed me to look at him more objectively and think, my God, what a man, what a life.
And so he writes about his early life, obviously, but he writes about what it was like to be a husband, a father. So as his kid, does it clarify anything from your childhood, say, about what that experience was like for you and your siblings?
Yeah, you know, I'm a parent now myself. My kids are grown up, listening to him talk about, you know, being a young man with a family and worrying about keeping a roof over their heads and worrying about whether he's raising them the right way and influencing them in the right way. You know, it's something that I can put myself in his position now because I've had that same experience, and I can identify with him as a person. In a way I never thought of doing before.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend it. Yeah. Everybody should help their parents write a book, and they might finally be able to see them in the clear light of day.
Indeed, yeah. He is quite candid in the book, and that's what struck me from what I read of it. I mean, it seems like he doesn't hold back. I mean, is that the case?
Yes, that is the case. I think it's just partly his nature. You know, he's a working class guy. He you know, and guys like him they tell it like it is, you know, when they get together and start chewing the fat with their buddies. They don't cover up the fact they're having trouble with the wife or whatever, you know. Whereas you know, more sophisticated person or more middle class type person learns how to kind of cover their tracks a bit, but guys like my dad just let it all hang out, and it's all there. They, of course, normally it never gets written down and published, so they never have to really deal with it as you know, a public kind of statement. But he does tell you basically what's on his mind and what he really thinks of other people, and in a way that, yeah, often you don't see that in memoirs. Most people are a little bit more calculating.
Mm-hmm. Well, what in the book he talks about his experience with death, because even though he's lived a long time, he's lived 100 years, a lot of the people around him have died. People like your mother Kay, he talks about that. He talks about the death of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, quite candidly, how does he think of say, the cycle of life and having lived as long as he has, yet having to experience death as he has? Is there something philosophical, do you think, that comes out of the process of living life?
Yeah, well, I think he says at the end of the book that he was hoping to be able to give us all a great ringing piece of wisdom about what he learned, and he ends up saying, well, life is just life. You just have to go out and live it. And one thing you can count on is that it's any time you think you've got it figured out, and any time you think you've finally got everything settled, that's when it's going to throw you another big curveball. And he's certainly had enough of those in his life. Like you say, his wife died when he was only in his 60s. He had a child die later in life. He's had, I don't know how many career changes enforced on him, probably at least 10, and has ended up doing all kinds of things that he never would have thought he'd end up doing. And I guess you know, what he would say is that you just have to roll with the punches and be ready to deal with that, whatever's in front of you at any given time. You know, he was completely knocked sideways by my mother's death. They'd been together for 40 years. But you know, after a while, he said, you just have to roll up your sleeves and you know, get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Move on to the next thing.
He just seems to bounce back from every adversity, every setback, quite well.
Yeah. That would be his message. Is that's what you have to do. You can't wallow in it or relive it all. You just have to, at some point, when you're ready, start moving on. There was a part there in the book where he says after my mother died in 1978, you know, people were offering to take him on trips around the world and introduce him to new ladies and so on. And he said, you can't do it that way. What you do is he started his recovery by going out and working in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you start your recovery by doing small things that are meaningful, and you slowly put your life back together in small steps. And he did that numerous times.
Now, you set him up with Edith?
I'm often accused of that because she was one of Harbor Publishing's authors. The truth is, I actually tried to keep them apart because I thought they would be so wrong for each other. I mean, Edith came from a very privileged background. Her father used to have her driven to school in a limousine. She graduated from Wellesley College and became a staff writer on the New Yorker magazine and hobnobbed with the great and famous, and here he was a rough-and-tumble, logger, roustabout kind of a guy from the B.C. coast, and I just thought, this can't go anywhere. And they obviously saw something in each other, and that's one of the amazing things in his story, is that he and this woman from the other side of the world and the other side of the social spectrum had an amazing compatibility, and they've had a wonderful 30 years together. They've gone around the world several times and seen and done everything together, and are now coasting to a gentle close of their lives in their little cabin over in Garden Bay, and they couldn't be happier.
There's a great photo that you snapped and posted to Facebook. It's not in the book, but it's the two of them in bed. Now, that sounds prurient, but it's not. It's an absolutely charming photograph.
Oh, yeah.
of the two of them just lying there and cuddling with each other.
Yeah, that was on Christmas morning last year. I went over to visit them, and I was actually looking after them. That day, the caregiver was off, and I just thought they looked so charming,
yeah.
You know, one 99 and the other 96, and here they were cuddling under the covers, completely covered up,
yeah.
But I couldn't resist posting it, and that picture got probably more comments than any other picture I've ever put on Facebook.
It says something about their marriage, about the relationship, doesn't it?
They're very affectionate. I would say over the years they've become more affectionate than they were in the beginning. They're very cuddly and they're always cooing at each other. It's makes me blush sometimes.
Well, what does the rest of the family think of the book? Frank's other kids and grandkids and hers as well.
Well, I haven't heard from everybody yet. I think there were some gasps at the frankness of his account of his life and the family and the close circle and of Edith and all the things they did, because like you say, he just tells it the way he sees it, and he doesn't stop to think about how this is going to go over with the rallies or anything like that. He just lets fly, and I have heard some harumphs from various corners of the family, but most of them are just incredibly proud of him.
Mm-hmm.
That at the age he is, that he finally pulled all this together.
And physically, I mean, and mentally, when you look at him, is there a secret, do you think, in terms of how he's been able to survive for 100 years?
Well, in the book, he addresses that, and he says, "Don't follow my example." He said, "I did everything wrong. I carried too much stress. I worked too many long hours. I ate all the wrong things. I smoked and I drank. So please don't imitate me." But And he gives all credit to Medicare. He says, you know, without modern medicine, I wouldn't be here right now. But that's his typical kind of self-deprecating way of putting it. I think, you know, he's got good genes. His aunts and uncles all lived well into their 90s. One aunt lived to 103. They're a very long-lived family. Mm-hmm. And I think also the fact that he worked so hard all his life, right up until the time he was 80, and even after he retired from his job, which he had then, which was maintenance man for the local water system, he still kept very busy and very active, probably till he was 90.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he kept his body in good working condition all those years, and I think that was also part of his secret.
So the last the last 10 years, I've talked to a lot of harbor authors on this program. The last couple of days, I've spent time talking to a couple of your authors, Mike McArdle and Patrick Lane. Mike's book is doing quite well, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And it's a departure for him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a bunch of short takes on people that he meets in the streets of Vancouver. This is actually one long story about his childhood in New York. So it's kind of a childhood memoir, and I think it's the best thing he's ever written.
I think so too. Yeah.
It's sort of didn't quite catch on right away because it was a change up from the Vancouver stories that he's been known for, but. I'm really glad to see that it's catching on and people are discovering what's in there. It's a terrific book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and there's so many lessons of life in there. I mean, it really reflects one's life.
Yeah.
Just as much as it does, yeah. You know, reading about him. And that interview's upcoming. It hasn't been posted yet. The other one, too, is the Patrick Lane interview, and that's his latest collection of poetry. And it's a pretty good collection, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I was a bit surprised by it because Pat announced about, not quite 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, that he was sort of at the end of his poetry writing career because he'd switched to prose and he'd written his memoir, There Is a Season, mm-hmm. and then he wrote quite a successful novel, Red Dog, Red Dog, and he was enjoying the larger audience that, mm-hmm. that prose gets, and so we did his collected poetry, his collection of poetry, thinking that, you know, he wasn't going to do a lot more poetry, but in the course of editing the collected works and reading back over all his former poems, he suddenly got the passion again and started writing poetry all over again. And it's a little different. It's a bit of a different voice, and it's a very even book. It's the poems are throughout the book very much of one piece, which is not something he's ever done before. So it's very interesting to see a guy in his 70s, who's been a poet all his life, suddenly change his tune, but do something still very impressive.
He said something at the end of the interview that struck me, and he mentioned you specifically, because he said that you'd always published his work, and you were his first publisher, I guess, of poetry. Is that right?
Not quite.
No?
I was very early in there, though.
Yeah, and he said that you've published his latest collection, and there were some years there, he said, that where you stood by him even when he wasn't pleasant to deal with, but he was nonetheless grateful.
Yeah, well, we do go back into the early 70s, I guess, when I published, I think, Unborn Things was the first book I did of his. Yeah, we've been good friends all that time. I don't remember a time when I found him unpleasant to deal with. I know he had rough times. Mm-hmm. You know, he went through several marriages and had his ups and downs. But I've always found Pat a great friend, and it's funny, his poetry is often criticized for being too dark. As a person, Patrick is actually a very sunny and light kind of a guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's always seems to be in a good mood, and it's just an interesting contrast between the real person and the work.
Yeah, and Harbor, it just seems to be growing year after year, and it's grown a great deal in the last number of years. Business is good, is it?
Yes, business is always throwing curveballs at us. It's always changing, but you know, we keep adapting and keep surviving.
Yeah, and the family's well too?
They're all fine. I just got a new grandson on November the 30th. My younger son, Patrick, and his wife, Ariel, had their first baby, and they live in Toronto, where he's a reporter for the Globe and Mail.
Right.
And my older son, Silas, is living in Gibson's, and he's
an elected official now, isn't he?
Yes, he ran in the last municipal election and got on the Gibson's council. Before that, he'd been head of the local school board for 8 or 9 years, I think. But his day job is that he runs his own publishing company, which is Nightwit Editions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to catch up, Howard. You'll give our best to Frank and Edith, and a happy Christmas to all of you there at Harbor. This is such a wonderful book. I mean, I can't wait to finish it and go back to the first one. Congratulations to you and Frank on it.
Well, thank you, Joseph. That was. It's always fun to come on your program and have a good chat.
The same, yeah. HarborPublishing.com is the website. The books, and you ought to get them. They're just wonderful reads. That went by fast, my first 100 years, and last year's Milk Spills and One Log Loads, Memories of a Pioneer Truck Driver, both from Harbor Publishing. Their editor and publisher, Howard White, joined me on the line from Madeira Park, British Columbia, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.